Hello listeners and welcome to Sportspiel, the podcast that gets just as excited about Winter Olympics curling as Mr. T does. Hashtag curling is cool, fool. Joining me, Alistair Hooper, as ever to discuss all things sport, is Mr. Will Moulton. But it is also a delight to say that the pair of us are joined by freelance journalist Alice Bowen.
Hi guys.
Welcome to the show, Alice. For your Sportspiel debut, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. Cold enough to be actually in Pyeongchang, so I'm feeling ready to go.
So we've recreated the conditions of wintry Pyeongchang outside.
At least it's sunny. Could be worse.
It's deceptively sunny.
Yeah.
Anyway, have we all got as pumped about Winter Olympics curling as Mr. T has?
I feel no one could be as pumped as Mr. T. I think he's really excelled himself. I mean, we all love curling, but he's really pushed the boat out with his tweets.
He has. I love his Twitter activity at the moment. It's so good.
I wouldn't say pumped. I'd say intrigued and gripped. But, you know, it doesn't want to make me get up and dance and rave.
Well, aren't you in the minority?
Yeah, clearly.
Anyway, we have some stats to dish out, which has come from our Winter Olympics specials that, obviously, if you're a regular listener to this, you'll know we did 8 episodes in 8 days, which kind of floored us in terms of the work we had to put in for it.
Well,
totally
floored
worth
you.
It. So, since we released the first Winter Olympics special on the 1st of February, we have had almost 1,000 downloads. Happy days all round.
Is that across all of our
podcast platforms? All platforms.
That's nice.
We are now at an all-time download of around 5,250.
Very good. Wow. That's really impressive. Well done, guys.
Thank you, everyone, for listening to us.
And thank you to everyone who shared. I mean, I know the Penny Coombs and Nick Butler one did incredibly well on SoundCloud alone. So,
exactly.
Thanks to everyone who actually took an interest.
Yes. But we have some lovely stories to tell on this podcast. If you are new to the show, here's a little brief outline of just how it works. The first part of every episode is the discussion section, where we go through some of the topical news in sport. And since we still have our blue Winter Olympics logo instead of our usual luminous green one, and considering what's been happening in South Korea, as well as our last few episodes being Winter Olympics specials, we are sticking with the Pyeongchang theme on this episode. We'll have a look at some of the British stars out in South Korea. We'll go through the moments that metaphorically blew our minds, as well as some of our favourite moments from the games. The second part of every episode is our feature interview section, where we hold a one-on-one interview with a star athlete. And on this episode, Will spoke to British paraskier Chris Lloyd about how he came back from his 2011 car crash and his journey to the upcoming Paralympics. All that and more on this episode of Sportspiel. On to the first topic today, and we're going straight into Brit Watch. Thankfully, for the sake of this introduction, this morning, Billy Morgan won bronze in the men's snowboarding big air, which means Great Britain have reached their medal target of 5 at these games, and that is this country's highest ever at a Winter Olympics. So we'll go through all the medal winners in depth in a moment, but first, I think Team GB's undisputed star of the games has to be Lizzie Yarnold, who successfully defended her skeleton gold medal from 4 years ago. Has she walked into the realms now of being one of this country's greatest ever athletes?
100%. She's the best Winter Olympian we've ever had. So in that respect, she must be up there in the best sports stars that Britain's got. I think the way she approaches it as well is she's so relaxed, she's so professional with the whole thing, but she's also so fun with it as well. Like, you've seen so many interviews and she's just laughing, having a great time. And I think that's something that's really respectable and a lot of people can really look up to.
She also has a great story as well, because after winning in 2014, she went on and won the Grand Slam, didn't she? She became overall World Cup champion, and basically that meant she won everything there was to win. Then she took the break, suffering from burnout. She's then had all these spells of dizziness. And even after her first run in the skeleton, we saw her struggling with the dizziness. She's had not a great season coming into this, but questionable suits aside, you know, Britain, they've done it with the cycling, they do it with other sports. Skeleton is one of those where they really only focus on the Olympics. And she's taken the pressure and she's proved that she can perform when it matters. And that's all that counts.
I think that's one of the biggest things, is that obviously she's a distinctly likable character anyway, but the fact that she could turn it on mentally and pull out a run like that on the final chance that she got to get into the top spot, like, she turned it on when it mattered, and that's an incredibly hard thing to do.
Yeah, it was especially surprising to see the German and the Austrian not perform so well on their final runs, but our girls took full advantage of it and were just so consistent throughout. Whereas, you know, Jacqueline Lerling, for example, had two superb runs and two maybe not so good runs, and Janine Flock had a couple of, you know, big mistakes. Whereas our girls were just consistent. If you look at their times, they're all within a couple of tenths of a second of each other, just so consistent. And that proved that's all that matters.
I think that the fact that she turned it on and she knew she needed to ramp it up a bit at that moment just shows how good she is and like why she deserves to be in our top ranked sports people.
I wasn't able to watch it, but I was listening to it live, and you knew when you just get that sense when you're watching or listening to sport that of the way it's going to go, you just knew Lizzie Arnold was going to pull out the perfect run, and you knew Laura Dees would be right up there as well. I never doubted it for a second.
That's the thing, because I did get to watch it live, and there's been plenty of times I've watched British sports people and felt a little bit of butterflies in my own stomach, because I always think, can they actually handle the pressure? But I didn't have that with her, because you know she's been there before and you know she can do it again. But rather coincidentally, you mentioned Laura Dees, who was one of our guests in the run-up to the Winter Olympics, and she went and got a bronze. She said she was going to do it, she said she could do it, and she was right.
I was so happy for Laura. You know, fantastic person to speak to, really engaging, and she spoke really well about her relationship with Lizzie as well, about how she was looking forward to going out and being able to experience it with Lizzie. And, you know, Lizzie celebrated the gold almost by herself last time. This time they've been able to celebrate it together. Laura put in, you know, a really consistent season, and that, going back to what I was saying previously, that's what she was saying. She was so pleased with how consistent she was all season, and then she went out there on that track for incredibly good runs, and it's also quite nice for us to say we've now had an Olympic medalist on the show. So we've had everything else, now we've got an Olympic medalist.
Had any type of medal going,
we haven't
except
had
Olympic
and Paralympic.
And Paralympic, but give it time.
I think what's been great for Laura as well is that she's had Lizzie Arnold there as a role model, and also someone who can like really show her the ropes in the sport. And I think the fact that they're also such good friends as well. If you see them having a conversation, they just have the best time. I think that's made such a difference to their performance.
Their story, so if people have been criticising, saying, oh, the UK sport has been putting too much money in to winter Olympic funding. But the story of Laura and Lizzie is just the perfect example of why the funding works. They both came through the Girls for Gold scheme back in, 2008. They've grown up in the squad together. Obviously, their careers took off at different rates and different paths. But at the end of the day, 10 years after they got into the sport, they've gone to an Olympic Games together and they've won medals together. That's just...
It's paid off.
Beautiful symmetry.
I think it certainly helps having Laura get to the level that she's at, just to push Lizzie Arnold, so they can push each other, and that means they've got to be at their best at all times if they want success. Now I'll bring in Dom Parsons now, who was another of our five medalists. He got bronze again in the skeleton, which means Britain took half of the skeleton medals that were on offer at these games. Suddenly we've become masters at this sport, despite the fact that we don't really have any tracks here. What do we put that down to? Why are we suddenly so good at skeleton?
I've seen quite a lot of saying that it's these special suits. We've claimed half of the medals in skeleton. But I don't know, I think you've got to have some talent there. The suit's not going to get you down that track and get you a gold medal. Like, we are incredibly good at this sport. Don't know quite how, like you said, like we don't have any tracks, but can't say the suits haven't helped.
The suits, yes, they've helped, but that doesn't explain why Britain has won medals previously. So every winter game since skeleton was reintroduced since 2002, Britain has won a medal. And now it was the turn of the men to get a medal as well as the women. But, you know, you've got Amy Williams, Lizzie Arnold, Shelley Rubman, Dom Parsons, Laura Dees. There is something going right in the skeleton programme. And if you look at the funding, they're getting more than £6 million from UK sport. That's more than some of the summer sports are getting. It's the most funded Winter Olympic sport. They do have the track down in Bath. And from what Laura was saying, you know, they're spending so much time abroad training. It is one of the more better funded programmes, and they've clearly got the right coaching structure in there. and they're training them correctly, whatever they're doing with the training, they're training them to be world-class athletes.
And with success, that breeds role models as well, and I'm sure there'll be another production line of people
well, they
that
have
seen this.
The new UK sports scheme have just come out where they're looking for skeleton athletes people who age 17 to 23 to take up the skeleton. So, you know, in 8 years' time, we could be talking about someone who's come through that scheme and has won an Olympic medal, which would be, you know, another incredible story.
Exactly. And on to the rest of our medalists at these games. The next one I'm going to mention is Izzy Atkin, 19 years old. And she got bronze in the ski slope style. It's been a long day. She won Britain's first ever skiing medal by doing that. And another top performance. But I think with her, a lot of people missed the point in that despite her incredible efforts, a lot of people only heard her accent. And that this is the same thing I have with Johanna Konta and people's reaction to her. Why can we not look past an accent and only judge them on the display that they actually put out on that day?
Izzy Atkin, yeah, she has an American accent, but she's got a father from Birmingham, as in Birmingham in the Midlands. So.
And her mum is from Malaysia.
So there's no reason why she can't qualify to be British. Johanna Konta's a slightly different one, because she was born in Australia to Hungarian parents, but... you know, she still qualifies as a Brit. Let's just support her for that. I don't like it when people criticise the plastic Brits, because if they've qualified to represent us and they're the best that we've got, support them, surely.
Yeah, agreed. I don't know why you then wouldn't support your athletes for representing your country. They've represented your country. They've won a medal for your country. I don't know. Yeah, how we can't look past that.
Exactly. And it was a top performance. And considering she's only 19, I think we expect a lot of big things from her in the future.
She only came onto sort of the scene of people's... So I remember we predicted her to do well and get a medal, but she only came onto the scene, really, in the public knowledge a couple of months ago when she won her first World Cup bronze. Before then, no one had heard of her, but you know, she had a really solid end to her World Cup season and then went and performed when it really mattered. So it's exciting to see where she can go in the next few years.
Exactly. It's a big shout out to the coaching setup. And our final medalist, who got it this morning as we record, was Billy Morgan, who got bronze in the snowboard big air. 28 years old, scored 85.50 on his final run after landing a frontside 1440 triple, which I can only describe as a flipping big jump.
He smashed it.
He absolutely smashed it. Another top performance, considering we don't have snow in this country, but our setup seems to be working at the moment.
Agreed. It's going really well. I think he was slightly lucky in the end, because I think quite a lot of the big competitors didn't land their final jump. So there was a little bit of luck involved there, but he absolutely smashed his last jump. It was incredible to watch. He's done amazingly well.
You could say it was luck, or you could say it was them crumbling under the pressure. You know, the likes of Max Parra and the others who fell were more supposed medal contenders than him. And the way it was scored, I think they needed to land two runs to get the medal, and he pulled out two huge runs, and he knew he had to land that final one, and he did. And again, like Lizzie, he coped with the pressure. So whatever they're doing, not just in terms of the training, but also the mental training as well, something's going right.
I agree that they might have crumbled under the pressure, but for him that does kind of constitute a bit of luck. Like, he managed to stick it out, they couldn't cope with the pressure, therefore it equals luck for him. I don't know, that's my opinion.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway,
that's sport, isn't it? And speaking of crumbling under the pressure and the mental side of things, this is where we come on to Elise Christie. I don't think we really need to explain what happened to her, but just in case, she fell down in the 500 metre final and in the 1500 metre semi-finals, and she was disqualified from the 1000 metre heats. I don't think I've ever wanted someone to get a medal or an Olympic medal as much as I want Elise Christie to have one. I don't know if that's a view everyone shares.
I don't know. I feel she's quite lucky in a way, because she had three chances. She had three different events where she could have won a medal. And you don't really get that in many sports. Maybe in swimming and cycling, yes, you can enter multiple events. But you normally have one event that you enter, and that is your one chance for gold. She had three chances and didn't get any of them. I think that she... I don't know. I feel that she's kind of yeah, she blew it. I'm sorry, but I don't think she should have entered that last event. And I know she's talked about after saying that her heart fully hadn't caught up with her body and she still wanted to win. But she wouldn't have won with the injury that she had. So I think it was stupid and she maybe should have gone out with a little bit more dignity intact.
I think I agree. I don't necessarily think she should have done the last race, but I thought it was admirable what she did because a lot of people would have hidden behind that injury and not come out and competed. And I genuinely had an argument with my two colleagues at work over, you know, and they both turned around and said, no, she's an elite athlete. She's got to be able to deal with the pressure, blah, blah, blah. But I think what a lot of people forget is, yeah, she's an elite athlete, but she's also a human. That's the thing, what I find a lot of people forget, especially armchair viewers of people who, like, watch the Winter Olympics every 4 years and don't pay attention in between. Like, people forget that these elite athletes are just humans. Yes, they're supposed to be able to cope with the pressure, and yes, you know, you would have expected to have Elise Christie, you know, if she wasn't injured, to get out there and race again without any questions being asked. But the fact that, you know, she could well easily have hidden behind that injury, and she decided, no, I'm going to come out, I'm going to give it another go, I don't think it was the right decision. I think she probably, for her own sake, should have sat it out. But I really admire the fact that she came out and did that, even if it wasn't necessary for the right reasons and didn't get the result she wanted.
I think that's one of the big things for me. She wasn't fit enough for that final event. She probably shouldn't have gone out in it. But to get knocked down in the Olympics 6 times in a row now, that takes a lot of guts to come back and still, you know, stand up in front of the media, explain yourself in front of the camera. No one has as much scrutiny as she does, save Lizzie Arnold, perhaps, at the Winter Olympics. And I think it's a big, big thing. And I don't really think the mental side of things is her strong point.
Will she still be around in 4 years? She says she's going to come back, but, you know, is she still going to be at the top of her game? Is she still going to want to do it? Is she going to want to put herself through that again? It's just, I don't know, just a matter of time, I think.
It's going to take a lot of guts and a lot of, like, a big journey to get her to the next Olympics. And like you said, I think 6 times, is that too many? Can someone really come back from that many times?
That's why I'm quite intrigued by the long track speed skating suggestion that's been made.
Oh, yeah.
That maybe she turns her hand.
She's already
that.
Turned around and said no to that. So
maybe she should reconsider. Something a little less unpredictable, because as a sport, it is nuts. Because people are always going down left, right and centre in pretty much every single race.
I mean, as we speak, the mass finals have just happened in the last sort of hour or so, which is, you know, multiple athletes on the short track at the same time. So that, I think, that would have been pretty chaotic to watch.
Exactly. It's chaotic enough as it is.
But one point I'd like to make was Simon. So I was listening to Five Live, and Simon Brotherton, who's been doing all the commentary for the BBC, said something that made me feel really stupid. So he's saying that everyone's been banning around all these excuses, all these reasons why Christie's failed, you know, she's actually not as good as we think, or she's been talked up too much, or there's conspiracies against her by the referees, or, you know, there's conspiracies against her by other athletes, or she can't cope with the pressure, she's a choker, blah, blah, blah. He just turned around and said, I watched Elise Christie at the World Championships last year, and I've watched her here. And the reason she's not won is because she's not in as good a form. And he made it sound so simple. That's something we talk about so often in so many other sports, is form. And actually, I have seen Elise Christie in those World Championships, and, you know, she was so elegant, she was gliding away at the front. There was no risk. She dominated those races. You watch her here. The reason she's gone down is because she's been scrapping. She's been pushing hard, and she doesn't look like it's in the best form. And it's just, when he said that, I just felt incredibly like, oh.
We've looked over form.
Yeah.
A bit, and just kind of look past it and just look at her, and you think, she's world champion. Granted, that was, you know, a fair amount of time ago now.
A year ago.
I think that's a decent point.
Just made me think, that's all.
But anyway, sticking with short track, and we'll touch on Charlotte Gilmartin, who was another of our guests before, and it wasn't really the best of games for her either. She crashed out in the 500 metres and the 1500 metres and went out in the heats in the 1000 metres, and I think it's just became one of those things. I don't think her form was there, and I don't think she had the luck of the draw, really.
Her performances will go under the radar, undetected.
Exactly.
Because yeah. Everyone was focused on Elise Christie. Like, we had a number of male athletes out there as well. We had, a couple of other females as well. But no one knows how they did. It's all the focus is on Elise.
Exactly. So. And then we'll move on to another past Sportsball guest who was way back on episode 9. And it was one that we had high hopes for before the start of the Olympics. And that was Katie Ormerod. And in terms of luck, how unlucky can you be to A, break two bones on two successive days, and one of those days being the day before the Winter Olympics opening ceremony? When I read that on the train coming back from Northampton, I was absolutely gutted for her.
I was as well, absolutely gutted for her.
After the day after she broke her wrist, did she really need to go and train, though? That would be my only question. But we weren't there, we don't know, so it's hard to say.
Exactly, and they're the experts to judge whether they train or not, I suppose. But considering she's only 20 and she's probably broken half the bones in her body by now, I mean, that is just the nature of the extreme sport that she does.
She is only 20, though. Next time, she's got a lot left in her. She'll hopefully medal at some point.
That's the positive, and actually, yeah. Time is definitely on her side. I feel it would have helped if she had her first experience of the Winter Olympic Games going into Beijing 2022. But best of luck, Katie, if you're listening.
And the fact is, her and Elise Christie were arguably the two favourites for British medals going into this, and the curlers as well.
Yeah.
And none of them got a medal,
and still got five.
GB still hit their target, so it's on the whole, it's actually a really, really positive game.
It is, yes.
We love an underdog, don't we?
We do. We'll quickly roll through the other guests that we had. So Emily Sarsfield, she went out in the quarterfinals of the women's ski cross. But, I mean, considering it took her three attempts to actually get to a Winter Olympics, I think she's pretty much enjoyed her journey, judging by Instagram feed as well. Charlie Guest, she got 33rd on her Olympic debut, and she came joint fifth, I believe, in the mixed team alpine event today.
Joni just lost out to the Norwegians in the quarters, who went on and secured the bronze, so really solid effort.
That was a solid effort. Amanda Lightfoot, she got 67th in the 7.5-kilometre sprint and 73rd in the 15-kilometre event. But she's vowed that she's going to be back for Beijing 2022, so it's definitely not the last we've seen of her. And lastly, Penny Coombs and Nick Buckland. They got 11th. But for me, regarding them, who really cares? Because the fact that they're there after her knee virtually exploded, that's one of the comeback stories of the year for me. I don't know if we share that opinion.
Yeah, well, I mean, you get this with a lot of the figure skaters, but watching those two compete together was special, you know. They might not have won, but all the Brits and all people across the world who watched it and, you know, who know her story, you know, it was just a beautiful moment to see her back, and can't wait to see them next time.
Exactly. So before we move on, are there any more British athletes we want to give a massive shout out to beforehand?
James Woods, fourth in the slopestyle. He could not have put down any bigger runs. You know, they were just happened to be three world-class athletes who beat him on the day. But that was, I think he was disappointed that he didn't medal, but I don't think he could have done a lot more.
So now we'll move on to the next topic, and that is mind-blown moments / weird and wonderful moments. We haven't really picked a definitive title. But so these are incredible moments that we thought, they're wow moments, that's what we'll call them. They're wow moments.
Wow moments.
So, we've all picked a few. We'll go around and give our wow moments that we got from the games as we were watching them or listening to them. Alice, do you want to go first?
So, I unfortunately didn't get to watch much of the first week because I was on holiday, lucky me.
But in Malaysia, which we'd all say,
yeah. So I was in a tiny little curry house in Malaysia, and the Winter Olympics was on, and it was the men's double luge, and no one was talking to each other because everyone was just watching the double luge. It's the most bizarre sport I've ever seen. It's just two men, and they lie on top of each other, and me and my sister, for about 45 minutes, couldn't work out what the point of the guy on the bottom was. We couldn't see how he was involved because the top guy steers and sees where he's going, and we had no idea what the bottom guy did. So that was my mind-blowing moment. That was my top one. My second one was the Garlic Girls. So these were the South Korean curling team who are from a region of South Korea that grows a lot of garlic, hence the name Garlic Girls. And they just became internet sensations, and apparently they didn't know that they were an internet sensation because they had a total social media ban. And so their coach knew, but was like, don't tell them, you can't tell them that they're internet sensations because it'll just muck with their heads. So that was my number two. And then my number three was the women's ski cross final yesterday morning. I can't remember what nationality the girl was, but she was coming in second fell over but was going so fast, she literally just bombed it down the rest of the track and still managed to finish in second with the Russian following up behind her. And that was quite good. I really enjoyed that as well. So those are my three wow moments.
Wow moments. Mind blown, in fact.
Mind blown.
I'll go in reverse order. So the third one, it wasn't an on-track competitive mind-blowing moment, but the Swiss skier Fabian Bosch became a bit of an internet sensation as well when he learned an alternative way of using an escalator, so grabbing the side of it and letting it lift you up. And I just thought, why have I never done that before? The second one, the fact that everyone gets so fascinated by people pushing a lump of rock and sweeping it with a floor brush.
Hashtag curling is cool for all.
Down an ice ring. Like, why do we get so fascinated by it?
It's ice bowls, isn't it?
It's brilliant, but it's just... If you take a step back and you look at the sport, it's so weird. But we get so engrossed by it.
I'd like to meet the people who invented curling. Like, how did they think of that?
Who thinks, I know what I'm going to do today?
But for me, and I'm not going to pronounce his name because I will do it wrong.
Please give it a go.
I also haven't got it in front of me because I decided I wasn't going to say it. But the shirtless Tongan, who became famous at Rio 2016 for carrying the Tongan flag at the opening ceremony in a lot of oil and not a lot else, was what it was wearing. He decided 12 months ago he was going to go to the Winter Olympics as a skier. He trained on rollerblades for most of that time. He hit the snow for the first time 12 weeks ago. He took part in the alpine skiing cross country and he said, my aim is not to come last. And he came 111th out of 113. He came, he came third to last. What an incredible story.
He came and he conquered.
Just fascinating.
I think, wasn't it the Mexican that came last in that?
Yeah, the Mexican who'd also skied for about 6 weeks.
That's what the Olympics is all about.
But it's pretty. It's lovely to see that. It was lovely to see the people who came 110th, 11th, 12th and 13th, and the guy who came second, all standing there waiting for the Mexican to cross the line.
Oh, I saw that. That was lovely. Yeah. That's so nice.
The spirit of the games in action.
Yeah. Olympic spirit. That's what we're all about. In terms of my wow, mind-blowing moments, whatever you want to call it, I'm just going to lump ski and snowball cross in together because it is ridiculous. Who gets into that? I mean, the course itself is mental anyway, but you've got four athletes going up against each other, race down to the finish, doing all manner of tricks along the way, and invariably a lot of them crash too. That's ridiculous. I'm also going to bung in short track as a general thing as well, because the one day I had really to sit down and properly get invested and watch the Winter Olympics was last Saturday, when we were all cheering on Elise Christie and Lizzie Arnold. And out of all the short track races I watched, I think there was one where no one crashed. So the unpredictable nature of that sport is absolutely ridiculous. And I've also signed up for ice skating lessons again. So I'm
top man.
So I've been motivated to get my skates back on by the Winter Olympics.
That's what it's all about.
Exactly.
I can only dream.
I'll get involved. And my final mind-blown moment is an ice hockey one, because Germany have rather shockingly got to the final of ice hockey, but their third goal against Canada in the semi-finals,
that was insane.
It was so good.
By Frank Maurer was unbelievable, where he put the stick in between his legs and turned it past the goaltender and into the back of the net.
I don't know how they managed to be so graceful with all that gear on and still just managed to do stuff like that. It was brilliant.
Exactly. If you can be graceful and also punch someone in the face quite spectacularly as well, which is what ice hockey is all about, it's a great sport. Go for it.
That was with that goal. You didn't actually realise until you watched maybe two or three replays just what he'd done. It just made it look so simple.
I think I needed to watch it about six times before I realised what had actually happened.
Before you can believe it, the slow motion replay on that is just
the commentators didn't even pick it up. They were like, "Oh yeah, Germany have scored again," and then they were like, "Oh, mind blown!"
Exactly. I think we've retweeted that on our Twitter feed, but it's on the BBC Sport website if people want to watch that video. It's unbelievable. But we will now move on to our favourite moments of the games that weren't Lizzie Arnold, because I think collectively that's probably our favourite moment of the game. But same as before, we'll go round and everyone can pick their favourite moments of Pyeongchang 2018.
So it wasn't one specific moment, it was a group of moments. Just watching the moguls was just brilliant. Like the way you can go from skiing just down a rutted track with doing all that. I was just watching them. I was just incredibly impressed by the strength in their knees. But then to do the flips and the tumbles as well. I was watching it with two of my closest friends, and it was just unbelievable what the skill they were showing. I did also annoy my friends though, because every time they would do a front or a backflip, I went, "Whee!" And you know, when you've watched a number of people running down the moguls, I think it's like to grate on them a little bit. But I just, that was a fascinating watch. Another one was the Canadian ice skaters, Scott Moir and Tessa Virtue, put out an unbelievable performance to win the gold. The gold they had failed to win in Sochi after similar success in Vancouver. But it wasn't, watching their performance was something special again. You know, the emotion, you can just see there is a connection between the two of them. Some people say it's purely professional. Some people, a lot of people on Twitter have gone above and beyond and said they've got to be an item. They've always been very secretive about it. I think, which is what makes people even more fascinated by them, is it almost a will they, won't they moment. And also provided my favourite tweet of the games, which was hashtag Virtue Moir just skated, Winter Olympics are over, they melted all of the ice, everyone is pregnant, we're all Canadian now. Like, Twitter gets so much stick because it's horrible, but there are just moments like that when actually Twitter is incredible. But for me, the best moment was not actually, apart from, you know, our British success, was by Czech skier, snowboarder, all-round incredible athlete Esther Ledecká. So she won her second gold medal of the games the other day in the snowboards, but that wasn't really the story. It was the fact that she turned up in the skiing Super G despite being a snowboarder, and she beat the reigning champion Anna Wiethe and the one and only Lindsey Vonn to win gold. Just the unbelievable scenes afterwards, like the shock on her face. And actually my favourite moment of the games was her interview afterwards, where she was doing it with her goggles and the crash helmet still on. A journalist turned around and said, "Why?" And she said, "Well, some of the girls thought they might be on the medal podium, so they put the makeup on. I didn't, so I've got no makeup on. I didn't want you to see my face." Just that again epitomises, you know, just how brilliant and amazing the games can be, and the fact that you can get so many talented, multi-talented athletes like Esther Ledecká, who are also just so humble. It's just incredible.
She'd never been on a podium at a Ski World Cup event before. So,
and then she came and did that.
Of all the times to get your first place, what a time to choose.
I think one of my favourite moments was actually the commentary during Izzy Atkins' slopestyle medal. I think it was Amy Williams and someone else was up in the commentary box, and they were screaming and jumping up and down, and I think they just represented how everyone was feeling at that time. That was absolutely brilliant. And I think also the kiss of the American slopestyle skier. Was he a slopestyle skier at the end?
Oh,
it was a kiss with him and his boyfriend.
His boyfriend, yeah.
And it was televised live in the US, which was such a big moment. And he tweeted about it after, being like, "This is what it's all about. This is what I've hoped for and aimed for in all these years." And obviously went viral, and it was just a really, really lovely moment, because he didn't know that the cameras were on, he didn't know it was live, and so it was a really tender moment, and it was really lovely. Those are probably my top two.
Absolutely. Esther Ledecká was one of mine as well, so you've nicked that.
It's all right.
But one of mine as well has come way back from the opening ceremony, and that was the drones, which they were a record-setting 1,218 drones used in that. And with the lights on them, they managed to create the Olympic rings in the sky, and then they rearranged the drones afterwards to make an image of a snowboarder. That was really, really cool. And also, I think this is probably one of my favourite moments of the games, is the finish of the men's 15-kilometre mass start biathlon, where Martin Fourcade of France lunged for the line along with German Simon Schemp, hope I'm saying that right, and it was the most incredible finish. They both lunged for the line at exactly the same time, and by not even inches, millimetres, Fourcade managed to get his foot just ahead of Schemp's, and he won his first gold in that event after two silver medals and going back to the last two Winter Olympics. So I presume from his point of view, it was certainly worth the wait, even to do it in that style. And before we finish, we'll quickly touch upon drugs, because we've talked about drugs a lot.
Yay.
On this podcast, and Russians. And I suppose, I don't know why we're surprised, if we are surprised, but lo and behold, two Olympic athletes from Russia, because that's what they're called now, tested positive for banned substances. And here's a test of my Russian pronunciation. The First one was Alexander Krushelnitsky.
Very
good.
Who
was a curler, thank you, who won bronze along with his wife. Unsurprisingly, they've both be now been stripped. Yeah.
That's
going to
be an awkward
medal.
Household for the next few months.
Grounds
also,
for divorce.
How can you dope in curling? The only thing I could think you might need, the only thing I think you might need in curling is beta blockers or something to, you know, slow the nerves down. But apart from that, what's the point of doping?
I think the only surprising thing about this Russian doping is that they still think that they can actually get away with it. I think that's the most incredible thing here.
Well, was it? It was the second woman, the bobslayer.
Oh, yes. Oh, she's my favourite.
Nadezhda Sergeyeva, I think.
She finished 12th.
Finished 12th in the two women bobslayer.
I mean, if you're going to take drugs, you'd at least hope to medal, wouldn't you? And she also, there's a picture doing the rounds on the internet of her wearing a T-shirt that literally says, "I don't do doping," which is obviously hilarious. Like, she's obviously trying to hide it in plain sight, but obviously that doesn't really work with doping,
does it?
It did
not work. And again, that shines a light under the Olympic athletes of Russia. And we'll see what happens, if anything, if there's any further outcome or further action to take out of that, because we talk about Russian doping on this podcast on a monthly basis now.
But what the bobsleigh will be remembered for, thankfully, at these games is the joint gold medal in the men's two-man. That was incredible between, was it Germany and Canada, when they got exactly the same time. So, fortunately, that's what the bobsled will be remembered for, and not the doper who came 12th.
Which is what we said in one of the Winter Olympic specials. We hope this will be remembered for the sport and not the drugs. Which I think, overall, I mean, we'll see as time goes on, but overall, yeah. I think that's been the case. And with that, we will draw a close to this discussion section. But stick around, because Will has his interview with para skier Chris Lloyd coming up.
So yeah, we're going to be keeping in with the Winter Olympics theme for just a little bit longer yet. We've got two more athletes to welcome on who will be going to the Paralympics. The first of which is the incredibly inspirational Chris Lloyd. So Chris first went skiing at the age of 14, did it as a hobby, as a lot of us do. Was also a rally driver, co-driver, and was involved in a horrific crash in 2011, which left him paralysed from the neck down with, you know, several vertebrae injuries. Almost completely crushed his spinal cord. He has since worked his way back to be able to move, but not just move. He's now a para skier and he's now qualified to go to Pyeongchang. Just an incredible story, so make sure you stick around and listen to him speak.
Yeah, stick around for that after this message from our new partner, Banana Crumble.
Have you signed up to Banana Crumble, the free online cash prize giveaway? Sign up today at www.bananacrumble.co.uk for your chance to win. Sign up is quick, free and easy. Don't believe us? Hear what some of our winners have had to say.
Winning £50 with Banana Crumble was an amazing feeling. Being a student, it's often hard to get money, so I was able to put it straight towards my rent for second term.
Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. Working alongside the Cystic Fibrosis Trust to raise vital funds for this fantastic cause.
Hello listeners, and welcome back to episode 19 of Sportspiel, where it is now time once again for our feature interview. And today I'm delighted to say that we are joined by Team GB paraskier Chris Lloyd. Welcome to the show, Chris, and thank you for coming on.
Thanks for inviting me on.
So for those of you who don't know, Chris will be competing in his first Olympics in March, having taken up the sport professionally in 2012 following a life-changing accident. That's something we'll come on to later, but Chris, I'd just like to first ask you about when you first went skiing for the first time and, you know, what your initial impressions were of it.
I first went skiing when I was in school, and yeah, as soon as I got up there and got on the slope, I just, yeah, loved being up in the fresh air and just sliding down the mountain was great.
And was it quite different from other sports you'd done while at school?
Yeah, it was totally different. Obviously, staying in Britain, there's not really any mountains. All it is on which you can slide down. But like I say, when I got up to Europe, it was totally different. Yeah.
And did you then sort of take it up as a hobby full time? Did you go quite regularly, or was it just a one-off thing that first time?
It was a one-off thing when I was about 14, and then I went again when I left school, probably when I was 18, and then after then, that's when I sort of started to get into it and started to go sort of once a year then, and yeah, so it became like a regular thing then.
Okay, and what other sports and activities were you quite into then as a youngster and a young man?
I was probably done a lot of like boxing and kickboxing and martial arts as a youngster. So yeah, I done that from like a young age up to probably 19 or 20.
Okay, and one thing I remember reading about you as well is you were heavily into your motorsport, and you were a rally driver at some point. Can you maybe explain how that came about?
Yeah, I got into rallying through a friend who sort of was into it, and then yeah, I ended up sort of buying a car, and then as soon as I started driving, I got the bug for that, then, and started to compete.
So you're quite like the adrenaline racing sports then of rallying and skiing.
Yeah, the speed and the adrenaline is a bit of a thing that I really like.
And unfortunately, though, there was that that nasty accident that sort of changed your whole life. Could you maybe talk us through sort of what happened and the injuries you received, if that's okay?
Yeah, in 2011, I ended up having a crash in a rally car. Basically, we went off the road and sort of flipped quite a few times, and we were quite high in the air, and we hit the tree sort of upside down, so the tree hit the roof, which hit my head, which broke my back, and then sort of damaged my spinal cord in my neck, which left me paralysed from the neck down. So then I ended up sort of going to hospital, and then got told that I wouldn't do a lot of things again. I'd never drive a rally car, never ski, and my life would be totally different.
And you said that they said you wouldn't be able to do things again. Was it feared that you were going to be permanently paralysed from the neck down, or was there thought that you would always get some movement back?
They never really specified anything. It was just a consultant come in and just obviously give me the sort of bad news and said, look, you're never going to this, like the skiing or the rally car driving again, and obviously your life's going to be totally different than compared to Christopher Reeves a bit. So I was a bit of a shock that was what I was told.
What was your reaction? Was it sort of one of initial devastation, or was it a determination to prove them wrong?
Yeah, well, there was nothing I could do. I had the injury, so I just had to look forward and get the determination to try and move forward, whatever recovery I could make. So, yeah, I had to take things a day at a time and just try and gain whatever I could gain back.
And in those early days, what was your sort of biggest inspiration? What really motivated you through those early days?
It's probably my family. I got two young children and my partner, so it felt like I'd let them down, to be honest, being stuck in hospital and not being able to do anything and having sort of your life taken away. So yeah, that was a big determining factor of just trying my best to get back as much normality as I could.
And going through your rehab and stuff, what point did you sort of decide that you wanted to go and, have a crack at becoming a Paralympic skier?
It was a point when I was in the rehabilitation centre in Cardiff, and there was a poster on the wall, the up-and-coming 2012 Paralympics.
Mm-hmm.
And I was sat in a wheelchair looking at the poster, and decided from there I'm going to make it my goal to get to a Paralympics.
And how inspirational was London 2012 for you?
Oh, it was really inspirational watching all the athletes obviously competing and obviously putting their adversities to one side and just doing their best. So that was a big driver for me.
And we've had such growth in sort of interest in Paralympic sport since London 2012, and you're coming in now at the start of 2018, and people are talking about it more and more. I guess that's something that must be so important to you, that Paralympic sport is becoming so mainstream.
Yeah, no, it's amazing to give everybody sort of opportunities to get into sport, whatever their impairment. So it's just nice to have the moment and seeing people having, like you said, the options to get into sport, feeling that they're not sort of left out.
And I was reading about your story on your website, and as well as all the physical rehab, you talked about your use of meditation and self-hypnosis and positive visualization. Can you maybe just explain how you used them and how important they were in getting you back to where you are now?
Yeah, well, I was told in hospital about sort of recreating pathways and visualization by a physio I knew really well, and sort of she encouraged me to do that, and then I sort of started sort of trying the meditation and sort of putting meditation like a point I wanted to be in like 3 months' time, and then tried my best to get to that point. And then once I'd gone to that point, I visualized another 3 months in advance, and then you see each time trying to get to a point and trying to make an improvement.
We think about, you know, injuries like you suffered as being a whole physical battle, but then is it a case of it that is just only half of it, and then the other half is the mental stuff, and that's why you've made such an improvement, is because, you know, you're employing all these techniques?
Oh yeah, the psychological effect of having such a, you know, spinal cord injury is a big thing, and like you said, you've got to be as positive as you can. It is a devastating injury, so like you said, being obviously using them techniques and being positive is really important.
And do you still use them now to help with your training and things like that?
Oh yeah, no, I haven't. Since I've had the injury, I haven't stopped using them. And yeah, I keep on using them, yeah.
And moving forward to putting on a pair of skis for the first time and actually being able to go out and hit the slopes, how did that go, and how was it?
Yeah, the first time I put a set of skis on was a year after my accident, and it was in like a snowdrome, and I had like a disability instructor for the day, and sort of, yeah, just put the skis on. It was just an amazing feeling to be on skis. I managed to sort of get from top to bottom in some shape, and yeah, that was the start of going forward with it all.
Of course, as you mentioned earlier in the interview, in Britain, we're not exactly renowned for our snow and our mountains. So, how difficult was it to keep on training and keep getting back on the skis and improving?
Yeah, it was really difficult because obviously there's a lot of travelling involved, and obviously I wasn't really that fit and I fatigued quite a lot and stuff. So, yeah, it was a big challenge at the start. But, obviously, I just kept acting and kept trying to improve and get up to the mountains whenever I could.
And at what point was it where you worked out and you realised that you had the ability to make it as a professional skier and potentially go to a Paralympic Games?
I think when I'd seen the poster on the wall in hospital, I just made a decision. I'm just going to do my best and try my hardest, and I'm going to try and get there. So at that point, I just thought, yeah, that's what my goal is, and I'm going to do everything I can to achieve it.
And moving into the sport professionally, what were your first races like? Was it successful straight from the off, or was it a bit of a slow burner?
Oh no, it took a long time. I was probably last in my first race, and it took quite a while to sort of build it up and to get sort of midfield and stuff. So yeah, it's not something which happened overnight. It was a long process.
And was that quite tough for you to take, or was it something you'd planned for and you were just prepared to keep going until you moved up the ranks?
Yeah, no, it's something that I knew I couldn't get straight on because the category I ski in is really tough and there's some really good skiers, so I knew that I weren't going to make an impact straight away, and I had a lot of hard work in front of me to try and get something with it.
And you were invited to go to Sochi, you not as an athlete, but just as part of the team. How was that experience for you?
Yeah, no, it gave me a really good insight into what to expect, because when we race, there isn't that many people there, and it's quite remote places, and so it was quite different going to the Paralympics and having seen the stage, you know, all the media there, all the people there, and the security you've got to go through. It was just something that I never thought it would be sort of that environment.
And is that something you're really looking forward to then in Pyeongchang, or all the extra buzz and excitement around your event?
Yeah, no, it'll be really good to have all that sort of, have the buzz and everything, and everybody sort of supporting you back home and stuff. So, yeah, it'll be amazing to get up on that stage and represent the country.
And when you were first selected for Pyeongchang a few weeks ago, how did you feel? It must have been amazing to have, you know, finally realised your dream and realised you're going to a Paralympic Games.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. It brought a tear to my eye when, obviously, I finally got selected. It was like a realisation that my dream had come true. Something that I set myself a goal 6 years ago, and then to eventually get here is unbelievable.
And have you got any particular expectations from yourself going into the Games?
Well, like I said, of achieve my dream by obviously making qualification and going to the games now. So that's all I want to do, is do the country proud and do my family proud and just do the best I can do, and yeah, and then see what happens at the end of the day.
Of course. And Team GB is sending over one of their biggest ever teams to the games. Are you expecting a lot from the team? Is it a really exciting time for them?
Yeah, no, they've brought in sort of snowboarding and Nordic, and which is obviously being represented again now, so which should be, you know, really exciting with obviously a bigger team, more athletes, and hopefully be more success as well.
And finally from me, for those of us who don't necessarily understand, can you maybe just explain how your injuries affect you in terms of skiing and make it so much harder?
Basically my power, my sensation, my balance, my proprioception, and everything is affected from injury, and sort of my muscles don't work the same. So it's like the only way I can explain it easily is like skiing with sort of wooden legs. You haven't got, when I'm skiing, I've probably got maybe 20 or 30% sensation depending on the temperature, and sometimes I can't even feel from like my knees down, and so the power is different, and trying to get the muscles to work in the way that you want them to work is all sort of changed because the wiring from my brain to my sort of limbs has been affected. So yeah, everything is a lot different, and yeah, it's a challenge every time I ski on the hill.
So does that make it sort of less of an enjoyable experience? Are you more focused on just getting down there rather than, you know, being able to sit back and appreciate the feeling of skiing?
Oh no, it's like I said, it doesn't matter about my injuries. It's just amazing to have the opportunity to just to be back on the mountain, because I had all that taken away. So just being back out, being able to put the skis on and being able to ski is just, yeah, just an amazing feeling, really.
Well, that's all from me, Chris, and I can say from all of us, myself, Alistair, all our listeners, your story is inspirational, and we wish you all the best at PyeongChang and going forward.
Brilliant. Thanks a lot.
Cheers, Chris. Thank you.
Thanks again to Chris for coming onto the podcast and sharing his story. Hope everyone enjoyed it, and we'll just take this moment to point everyone in the direction of our social media pages. We're on Facebook, Instagram, and we're on Twitter. All our pages are SportsBillPod, and you can always email us constructive feedback at our email, which is sportsbillpod@gmail.com. With that, it's a big thanks to Alice for coming on to the podcast and imparting some wisdom.
Thanks for
having me. People have always said we need more wisdom on this podcast.
A lot more.
A lot more. Too many times than I can count. We, the pair of us, will be back in 2 weeks' time, but we have a special episode coming out next Saturday, which you've done.
I have indeed.
Tell us more.
Mono, you'll find out near the time, but it's another inspirational human being who could well be setting records and winning lots of medals at PyeongChang in the Winter Paralympics. So stick around for that.
Stick around and have fun until then, everyone. Bye-bye.